This is the Wise Men Say podcast, a day early for you when we have the Man United game to talk about and we have the Hull game to talk about. And it's a good job too because Craig Clark, who's joined us, said he doesn't know what to say about the Man United game, so trying to drag something out for 45 minutes might have been a bit problematic.
Well, it was a bit of a routine sort of game, wasn't it?
Do you want to get your 30 seconds out of the way now then?
We're lost.
And then we expected to lose. 20 minutes.
I'm trying to enjoy black tea, which isn't going very well at the moment.
There's nothing wrong with black tea.
Leaves are like a film in and around the mouth, like in your teeth and like on your. Ugh.
Unfortunately, no tea pigs were available. Mm. Other teas are available, but get tea pigs.
Tea pigs. Posh tea.
Nice tea.
You think you're better than everyone else, don't you? Because you drink better tea.
No, I enjoyed one during the first half though yesterday. I think we need to move this conversation quickly.
You could have been in Old Trafford. I could have been
with that kind of drink.
Yeah. Was talking about.
I was the prawn sandwich, yeah,
the tea pig brigade.
Yeah, the tea pigade.
See, when we get Craig on, it's normally the end of the show before we go on off some sort of hippie tangent of some sort.
It's only tea.
I don't think tea pigs are hippie stuff.
Depends, doesn't it?
Delicious though.
Cleverly mass marketed niche product. Which is Craig quite, has bought into.
Well, so. Quite a lot of that is essentially the modern hippie, is it not? Mm. You know, Holland and Barrett. Let's move on.
Can he strike pair then?
Well, Holland and Barrett.
Earl Barrett. Defender, wasn't he?
I don't know. Can't remember.
Bringing it back to football, that's what we're here for.
Carry on if you like. I'm just going to take a back seat here.
Holland and Earl Barrett. Can't think of anything else to say. Did they both play for Villa or maybe?
Don't know.
Should we start this whole. Let
me know when you want to continue. I'm quite happy.
We already had one false start.
I think we've.
It's too early. It's a Sunday morning, isn't it? We didn't. Well, that's why there's only three of us in the studio, just myself, Gareth, and Craig here, the hardcore, because we kind of tried to get other people on, but only half heartedly, didn't we? Because we knew the people weren't going to
get up on a Sunday morning. It was a struggle.
Thanks for travelling all the way, Craig. Anyway,
it's not that far. It took an hour.
Exactly.
Nah, it's not that bad, really.
10 minutes in the car for me, so.
Yeah. All right, don't need to rub it in.
Showing off. I've got to car me.
I know.
Oh, I've really shown off.
Getting buses and walking through, walk through Southwick, you know.
It isn't the 1930s, you know.
Stephen's car that leaks windscreen washer fluid in your back when you sit in it.
It doesn't now because it's been fixed.
It's been fixed.
I did that intentionally because I knew you were sitting there. It was a booby trap.
So this pretty much sums up my thoughts on the Man United game. So if you want to talk about Hull now...
We'll hear you from Gus on it first. He didn't really want to talk about the red card, so I've just put a bit
what
in...
What Nick Barnes made of.
So we've just put a bit in where he isn't talking about that, though we probably will afterwards.
I think that's the moment of the game and everybody would talk. But I had to analyse the game before that and... We started as we planned. We were very aggressive. We broke with danger. We had a couple of great opportunities to go and make the difference. When you have that chances in Old Trafford, you need to take them. Then we defended the way that we do. We made it very, very difficult for them. They couldn't find a way. People were getting frustrated. So halftime came to a good time, I think, for us. We tried to reorganize. And we needed to be better on the ball the second half, and we were not. So we get the ball away cheaply. We have to defend a lot. So we were ready to change when the penalty happened, which is it's a shame, really, because there is moments in the games that things happen for one reason or another. And maybe before the penalty, if we change, things will change the other way. So, disappointed with the first 20 minutes of the second half.
Has that inspired you, Craig, in a bursting out with some analysis of the game?
It just sums it up, doesn't it? They did all right. That was about it. I mean, the thing I most enjoyed about the game, I suppose, the early period when we did that high pressing and got at them on the break.
And they looked very nervy, didn't they?
Before the game, I was thinking, you know, Wickham's a man who you really want him to be on his game and to get him in it because he's going to terrify some of those centre-backs if he's powerfully running at them. And there was that one moment, wasn't there, where he had that shot. It. Well, we were saying, respectively, on the replay, me and my mates were watching, if he'd sort of come onto his left foot, gives the defender something to think about, he's running into Defoe's space, he keeps cutting across, so they're closing the gap and the defender hasn't got anything to think about.
He could have released it earlier.
Yeah. Well, there was the two options. If you go left, you make the defender make a decision, like onto his left foot, or you hit, you play the ball early. In the end, it wasn't a bad effort.
No, well, I was going to say...
But you just think, when if he feeds a ball into Defoe there, Defoe's one touch into the box, and he's got time to get a clean strike away. And like Wickham, he closed his angle down, and like you were saying it was a decent save. And
I think ultimately. We know that he should have played Wickham in first, ideally. Well, if he saw him
Wickham,
early, he could have
Wickham
slipped
didn't
him in.
Want to play himself
so,
in.
Sorry, played to Defoe in earlier.
Sorry.
But ultimately, I said to Gareth at the time, in the same way, on one hand, I'm encouraged that Wickham was proactive and took the responsibility and got a decent shot away, because a lot of keepers wouldn't have saved that because it was close to De Gea's body. Mm. Now, Pantilimon, for example, wouldn't have got down and saved that. So
price is so low.
Yeah. I just saw low, even Pantilimon would have got down to save that.
Yeah. Well, it can't be that low. You wouldn't get down to him. Never mind. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
We're doing some into the light banter there.
Yeah, I can't handle it. But no, I thought that was a positive sign in the sense that at least he did what he did.
Yeah, you want him
he's
to be
powerful,
doing that,
he's getting at them, they look scared.
From that position as well, he's going to have to run with the ball more.
The thing is, it was like the
decision making.
It was like some
sort
of like Wickham. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. I'm sort of weird.
Microcosm of him as a player?
It was just, he kind of did something quite good, but at the same time, it was as a result of his terrible decision-making. Yeah. It's like, if he just passed it first time. I mean, we were watching, and straight away...
He might argue
like,
that he always intended to run with the ball and get a shot away, though.
That was still the wrong decision.
Well, yeah.
He might argue it was
a couple of other moments.
If he scores, he can go, well, nah. But he didn't, did he? So
I know, but then...
So, nah.
Then he could have played Defoe in, and he mightn't have scored.
He might not.
And then he might have been thinking, why didn't I take it on?
That was definitely... But he was in a better position.
No,
but anyway, he could have chipped it up and bicycle kicked it from 30
yards. Well, he could have done any number of things that...
I don't know why he didn't.
But...
Would have been more
that
exciting.
Was the brightest moment, wasn't it? Well, there was a couple of others. Defoe had that sort of chip, and he had another effort. And then Johnson had that moment where he got the ball on the edge of the box and he couldn't get a shot away. Yeah. But then
I thought Johnson should have released it, pull the trigger a bit sooner.
But obviously, it depends which way you're looking at. Mm. When you're looking at it on, like,
they're not going to let you just have the space.
Well, of course they're not. But if he hits it and it goes straight into someone's legs, you're just as frustrated. So you can see he's trying to work the space and obviously just got more and more closed down. The problem was after that, those three players were pretty isolated after those three sort of four opportunities.
Man United never
involved.
Man United pushed us back.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got so many good players.
Oh, God,
And, to be fair to Wickham, I thought he was excellent in the first half.
Yeah, he was.
That, like, defending from that wide position, I thought he did really well. And there comes times in games where you've got to defend. I know, like, a lot of people get frustrated because we haven't got a positive result. It's all about the fact that, negative and all this kind of thing. You can't just go, we're just going to go and win. Like, it's not as easy. You've got to, like, compete in games and, like, earn the right to win. They were staying in the game.
Yeah.
And what it was funny because I said to Stephen, we saw Fellaini coming on, and I said, don't concede before the substitution because this is our chance to get into it, because when Fellaini's coming on, he's going to change, so he's going to start going direct because what they're doing hasn't worked. So he's going to start knocking it long. And I thought that's our best chance because there's more second balls and they'll give us an opportunity to break on them.
Well, Brown had actually stood up to the physical battle well.
He was immense against Falcao. I mean, he bossed Falcao.
And so you think...
First half.
The amount of times we've been bossed by Fellaini when he was in an Everton shirt, you thought, maybe it's Brown, he would
Brown
be the one
best,
who would...
Our best player before he got sent off.
Yeah, well, and obviously incorrectly sent off at that. The centre backs were the whole defence was fine, really.
Reviere, I think, is still his quality. Like,
yeah,
I
he's a good
he's
player.
Really good.
Thought Van Aanholt. I mean, that Wickham chance we're talking about there, that was because he was proactive. He got to hold the ball. He ran.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that created space, and he made the right decision to give it to Wickham.
It was good to see the concentration levels high again, then, wasn't it? Yeah. It had to be at Old Trafford, I guess. But you want them. We'll talk about Hull later. You want them to sustain that, though. That's been
well,
the issue,
that's it, isn't it?
It
was nice to see Catamol not get booked as well.
Yeah.
He was very close to the yellow card.
The ref went to his pocket, and I think we were saying afterwards. Somebody said he was actually just going to his pocket for the spray because I actually thought he'd been booked for a few minutes.
We were talking about it. I was going, that's him out for the next two games, and you were like, oh. And we had it, and then I looked on Twitter, and it was he hasn't been booked. So.
Yeah,
that was a relief, to be honest.
Yeah, that was probably the brightest spot on it in many respects.
Like. I mean, well,
I don't know. I think the players played well in the game. Like, I know it's frustrating that we didn't score again, but you can't say that we didn't have the chances in the first half. The chances dried up in the second because we're under pressure.
And then we're down to 10 after that, weren't we?
So. But the game changes, and you've got to react, and they did. They defended properly. I mean, I think they were probably... I mean, it's a ridiculous touch from Falcao. I mean, the cross was average, really, but he's managed to...
Yeah.
You know, the only good thing he did in the game. Mm. And shows how fickle those Man United fans are, by the way, because they were twisting about him. Mm. And then he does one good thing, wins that penalty, and everyone was booing when he got substituted. Yeah. I mean, we talk about Sunderland fans getting frustrated.
Different levels of expectation.
After 20 minutes, they were booing when they were passing the ball backwards.
Different levels of expectation. I was saying to Steve before we came on, people talk about, like, you know, this sort of, I don't know, what association with Man United. Obviously, we've got a lot of ex-players. I remember, obviously, them beating Newcastle at the title. Obviously, a lot of people had time for Man United. For that reason, we sort of all kind of laughed at Newcastle together or whatever. But in some ways, their style of football...
Laughed in unison.
..was, like, a much better version of us. Like, you know, when it was good under Reid, it was that intensity pushing forward. And United always had wingers, didn't they, you know? And they're sort of moving away from that. And I don't think their fans are wholly... Well, a lot of them don't seem to like it. They want to play the way they've always played. This continental approach at Van Gaal, sort of the slower passing, they're not interested in. And it just shows you that for every Swansea, if you like, or Southampton or whatever club like that, who, because they've been so far down, it's fine. We've built up to this through lower divisions. When you're Man United and you're used to playing a certain way, and that way wins your leagues, wins your Champions Leagues, and then you lose that, and then you come back with a new manager who's obviously a respected bloke, but he's got a totally different way of playing. It's gonna take a while. Their fans are gonna have to realise as well, in the way I suppose we are, that's probably never going to happen again, that type of football at the top level. Ferguson was possibly the last proponent of it. It's an odd one. Maybe Simeone, who can play, get the teams playing like that. Well, apparently Fergie got in touch with him, remember, and told him, you're the future. That's what he said anyway.
It was just banter, that, though, wasn't it?
I think, well, Fergie bantered Liverpool into spending £10 million on Charlie Adam, didn't he? So, a clever bloke, you know.
I mean, Aguero was... of that window, many people signing of the window, but Charlie Adam was definitely there.
Why?
That's a reference to a tweet done by a journalist.
Who was at the game yesterday?
Who was at the game yesterday? Yeah.
Anyway, I know that's a bit of a digression into Man United.
I want to mention, because you mentioned a positive there. I don't like to talk about controversial decisions and stuff. But we'll mention the red card though. We've been seeing with you some luck. Now, I would rather it come in the form of a dodgy penalty go our way or something, but a little bit of a silver lining that we might get out of this without any suspensions, in that the referee stuck by his decision to send Brown off. He said he saw the O'Shea tackle. He thought it was Brown who fouled him, meaning that if we appeal that red card and the FA think it wasn't a red card, they can't then turn that on to O'Shea because the referee has made his decision. So... that's one positive.
Well, even if Brown was suspended,
you would take that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, because he wasn't going to play probably two games off the spin.
But now we can still appeal the Brown one.
And then if they both play, because he's missed half an hour or whatever it was, and that might actually give him enough time. And in many respects, you'd sort of quite like to see Brown and O'Shea against Hull, because of the type of football Bruce will play against us. It's worked four times in a row now. They get at us and they'll dive about a bit. And it'll frustrate people like Cantamole. And in some ways, you want your experienced heads in there. Like, Brown will take any physical battle that's going to be thrown his way. As shown, as you mentioned, like Falcao, he sort of really manfully dealt with him. Obviously, O'Shea as well. I think he's had an excellent season overall. I saw a few people having a dig at him yesterday, saying, I can't wait for both of them to go. They're both past it. And I was thinking, to me, it's between Larson and O'Shea for player of the season, and there's not much between them. Arguably, it's Cattermole, simply because when he's in the team, we're infinitely better. And in a sense, even though he's not playing a lot of games compared to the other two, the difference he makes almost makes him player of the season. But in terms of consistency of performance, I think O'Shea's been brilliant. And again, you want a player like him lining up against Tola. He's less likely to get sucked into silly battles, I think.
I think yesterday, I thought Larson was very good again. Like you say, him and O'Shea being excellent. And I think the frustrating thing really is yes, we didn't create many chances in the second half, and that's going to happen sometimes.
Still missing that link from defence.
But, you know, in the first half, I mean, those three chances that they created on the edge of the box, I mean, they've hit the target once, haven't they? No, well, twice, sorry, because Defoe had an effort which he kind of scuffed, which he should have done better with, really. The Wickham one, and then the one that, the hardest one, which Defoe's tried to curl it in the top corner. You should really, I would say, you should really be scoring one of them, one of those three situations. You should turn into a goal, and that's the problem at the moment. With chances, I wouldn't say chances are at a premium in some games. Yes, we've been a bit toothless, but you look back and see the chances that we've missed in games when we've created five or six, and maybe we've had like one or two gilt-edged ones, and we just don't score the easy chances either.
No. So the psychological aspect of it as well, because if you go goal up, you know what that does to the opposition as well. For example, if you keep missing those chances and then you go and concede, everybody's going to be deflated, aren't they?
Hull's a funny one, because in many ways, certainly in the home game, you thought Bruce is like, you know, they like to come out for 20 minutes and they usually huff and puff and run out of ideas and energy, and then the you know, that's Bruce's teams in a nutshell. Obviously, he's going to win some games, but we actually took an early lead against them. We started like taking the mickey almost, but then we still got sucked into that, like them winning fouls, and they were really keeping the ball very high up the pitch. And we can't, usually you'd think that'll give us space to get in behind, but we just couldn't take it off them. I'm not talking about players like Man United who've got like Daley Blind and Herrera who can hold the ball. You're talking about David Myler. You're talking about, like, they didn't even have Huddleston and Livermore playing. And you think we've got to stand up to that much better. Poyet's got to find a way to stop his players getting sucked into that, because Man United, you can forgive it. I mean, I saw people complaining about substitutions and stuff, and you think, we're down to 10 men at Old Trafford. Yeah, we're a goal down. I'm not sure what people expect. People saying they want Gomez taken off, and you think, well, he actually played okay,
yeah,
but
Gomez was fine,
but what's taking him off going to really do? And who are you going to bring on from? You're going to leave a central midfield too?
Yeah, no.
We're getting bossed.
I think the
first half they had about 70% of the ball. You know, it's just unrealistic to think like that.
Yeah.
Against Hull, if you go 1-0 down, yeah, okay. Reshape the team.
I was surprised when people were moaning about the game. You said at the top of the show, you know, what would you expect really from a game like this? We're going to get on to Hull specifically, just finally on Man U. Does it make you smirk a little bit that Man United spent so much on a player in Di Maria, to say how awful he was? He was comical at times.
I actually don't think he was that bad.
I don't think he was that bad on the ball.
No, he was alright when he drove with the ball, but when he was driving
the
with the ball,
wasn't great.
And then when he had to make a pass or a through ball, not one came off.
Well, I think it was this in, so it might have been Into the Light, or it might have been Football Ramble, something. We're talking about Di Maria and Ozil. I think it was. Would have been the Football Ramble. No, because I thought you might have been talking about Di Maria in the build-up.
Right, okay.
But obviously then I realised it was Ozil.
Okay.
Those players are playing in La Liga for a team miles, like apart from Barcelona, obviously Atletico, streets ahead, you're going to win games 6-7-0. You're going to score tons of goals. Stuff like that's not as noticeable. When you're playing for Man United, who are in transition, it's a lot more noticeable, especially Man United have always been quite good with the ball. I also think he's a player that they've signed who, kind of, what do you do with him? Like, they've got a lot of players, and you're
completely lopsided.
It's not entirely his fault, is it?
He wants to play 3-5-2.
They're just relying on individual talent, aren't they?
If you want to play 3-5-2 and you've got Ashley Young at wing back and Valencia at wing back,
where does Di Maria fit into that?
I mean,
he's played in a midfield three for Argentina. He's done it for Real Madrid. And I don't want to get into analysing Man United, but I really like Di Maria. And
I just thought yesterday he was very erratic, and it was quite funny.
It was some moments where it was quite amusing, but a lot of it was down to just how disjointed they were. And yet, you could say that and say, "Well, we should be taking that chance." You know, but they're hard. They've only lost two in the last 20 years.
Yeah, it's been the story there. See, that's why
they're still winning, though.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, it's amazing that you can have a player who's underperforming like that, who costs that much money. You bring Yanazai on, who's, you know, when everyone was fighting.
He was excellent.
But he seems to only have been excellent against us.
Yeah.
Everyone was fighting over whose national team was going
to
play for. He's disappeared for 12 months.
He won't be the first to take that sort of...
No, God, no, no.
But let's be crap against everybody apart from Sunderland.
Of course, but they've got that wealth of talent. You know, like, they can turn the bench for Fellaini, 30-odd million quid or whatever he cost. And whether you laugh at him or not, he's actually been quite a useful player for them this season. They've found a way to use him properly. Yeah. And he is a good player. He's someone I'd love to see at Sunderland.
Yeah, he's a great player.
And
I think it is easy, isn't it, to, like, you know, like you say, it's expectation levels, and it is very easy to sort of start laughing at these kinds of players. You know, they're still
miles
great,
better than anything we've got. Juan Mata coming
off
the bench.
Let's just do one game. Let's just do
no,
for one game.
I didn't mean to, like, undermine the point that you were laughing at.
Yes, you did, and we're going to move on.
No, way, okay.
Right.
One of the team.
We'll come back. We're going to talk about Hull. John Azell is on the phone now, and he's a Hull City fan. It's been a while since we've did this on the Wise Men Say Pod, isn't it?
Done
like spoke to. Oh, shut up. You know that I do. You know that the slang comes out with the duns and
slang. That's slang. The excuse, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Is that
that's
it?
Colloquial.
Is that?
Yeah.
Do you want to carry on? Shall I sit back and you take over?
Yeah, take the mic. Are you? Yeah, carry on.
No, go on. No.
He's protest. Oh, he's have come out the pram.
It's a silent protest from now on.
Yeah.
But Johnny has been sucked into the vortex.
Yeah. One of those awkward moments where someone's having an argument in a pub and you're like, ooh, that's what's happened. Anyway.
And then think,
start again, go on.
Right, John. Huge game. Yes. Huge game this week. Are you nervous for it?
I'm less nervous than I would have been about 3 weeks ago. We picked up a bit. We lost yesterday, badly. But the 6 points we picked up against Villa, and who did we play? Oh my God! I just got brain block. QPR. So we got 6 points in the last two home games, which were very good. So the pressure's off us a little bit. I mean, we were in the bottom three weeks ago, and now we're out of it by 4 points. So yeah, it's a big game though. It's got one we're targeting to win, really.
Are you confident?
Yes, I'd say so. If Brucey picks the right team. He completely balls it up yesterday. Decided to play with no recognised strikers again away from home, which is always good.
But he loves his strikers.
Oh, yeah.
Keeps buying them.
Well, you say he does, but he doesn't. Because actually, until we signed Undoy, he'd been signing wingers.
So, oh, right.
Yeah, he keeps signing these wingers that thinks they're going to play behind a striker, which isn't really working.
All right, sounds familiar.
Is it, what's he with now? Because he was with 3-5-2 a lot now. Has he changed it again?
No, we are 3-5-2. That's probably our most settled thing. What made it a bit strange this summer was that he did go out and sign wingers. He signed Snodgrass, he signed Tom Ince, and then he got the your friend from Newcastle, who was really good.
Oh, Ben Arfa, yeah. And what about Ramirez as well, yeah?
Ramirez, yeah. So they're all not, you know, they're all wingers basically, and he keeps playing behind the front man, which is really odd. So. It's odd, really.
Many odd team selections we've witnessed.
It was funny because Steve Bruce used to sign all the strikers and then play them on the wing.
Yeah.
So,
really?
Yeah, that was his thing at Sunderland.
That was his thing at Sunderland, yeah. So that's a bit of a strange one.
He's reversed it.
He's moved on. He's progressed his managerial qualities to a different area. So maybe we'll have
centre-backs
up front.
He signed loads of wingers. He signed loads of wingers and then after about three games went back to three at the back and played with wing-backs. Well, so, El Mohamed is obviously in there every week. And we've got either Robbie Brady or Andy Robertson playing at left wing back. So all the wingers that he signed didn't get a game, and that's where they've gone on loan and stuff like that, really.
And yet, despite all of that, you have won those two games, like you say, and you keep beating us every time we play.
Yeah, why do you keep beating us, John? What's the secret?
You must be really bad.
Well, not far off the mark.
Isn't it what you sing 4-3 in a row to Newcastle? 4 in a row, that's about, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's a weird parallel, actually. Bizarre.
You must be due one, I think. So.
I don't know.
I mean, Boxing Day, we came to it, we conceded within a minute, and I thought, well, must be finishing now, and you still managed to lose that game. So,
it was a good effort that was actually.
I know. Even for Sunderland, that was some level of self-destruction.
Yeah,
that
it
one,
was
wasn't it?
Pretty spectacular.
Well, that was one of the games where we didn't play a striker. So
I was just going to say that you didn't play one. It was it Ramirez and Aluko was someone in attack.
Yeah. So Aluko's it's a real shame about Aluko because he was a really good player. Basically, he's done his Achilles twice. Gareth Barry just completely did him. The beginning of last season, he's never come back really from that, so he won't be in Premier League for much longer, I don't think.
I didn't realise it was a point that bad for him. Obviously
it
is.
Well, in the Championship when we got promoted, he was the best player by a mile in that Championship, and that's when he first did his Achilles. And he came back and looked good again. He scored a crack against Newcastle beginning of last year.
Oh, I remember that.
And then Gareth Barry, like I say, he's a dirty bastard, isn't he? So
that's one way of putting it.
So he just did him, and he's never come back from that, really, unfortunately.
So what do you expect your sort of lineup to be? No strikers again, or do you think you'd play Jelovic? Or?
Well, Jelovic has got a bad knee.
Yeah.
And he's managing him through it. And I didn't expect Jelovic to play yesterday, which is if Jelovic plays, I think we'll probably win. Because when he's played this season, we've been fantastic. Mm. Kind of up front wise. Because, I mean, he's only had about 15 shots and scored 8 goals this year, something like that. So,
yeah.
Without him, we're very impotent up front.
Okay.
So I expect us to play with McGregor in goal. And then I expect the centre-half probably to stay the same with McShane, Bruce and Dawson. Because our captain, Davis, this year, since we signed Dawson, Curtis Davis, who was superb last year, is having an absolute nightmare.
It's so funny, that one, isn't it?
Calls for him to be in England squad last season, wasn't it?
And I thought he probably deserved it last year, but he's been rubbish this year. It's weird.
It's one of those things that happens with Bruce, I think, because when we had Michael Turner, there was a lot of people like Turner for England like for 6 months.
He kept getting injured,
and then it just fell apart.
He kept getting injured though, didn't he? And he struggled.
Yeah, well,
struggled,
that's another thing.
Those,
like what John's saying, you're hearing a lot. Like Jelovic is injured, Aluko's injured. I know, like that one's off the bat of a Barry challenge, but we always had a lot of injuries, didn't we? With him in charge. So I don't know what it is. I don't know whether he just doesn't take the fitness side of things. Well, it wouldn't surprise you, would it?
Aside in the image of himself.
Yeah.
I've got to say, like, when we played West Ham away and we got beat 3-0, and Rodney Marsh said on Twitter, said, like, the Ulster don't look fit. And I looked at him and thought, you're right. I mean, they were blowing. I mean, Mailer, who's meant to be the fittest guy, he can't play, but he's a fit guy. I mean, he was blowing, and I'm thinking, why is that happening? Because the previous 2 years, they looked quite fit. You know, we looked competitive all the time, and I don't know whether Bruce, he just became too pally with them, or because we've just got a new assistant manager, and that's where the upturning form's come from, to be honest, with Mike Phelan coming in. I don't know if Bruce, just doesn't have the authority with him.
It could be because when we had O'Neill, he didn't have his usual assistant and it didn't work for him at all. I wonder whether some of these older school managers, like English blokes, more like...
You wonder how much of the guidance is an influence.
They need that right-hand man.
Bruce binned Eric Black off and everyone, didn't he, after Sunderland?
That's what I mean, but it didn't work at Sunderland, did it? No. Like, at the end.
But
so I wonder whether...
The interesting thing is that Steve Agnew, I know, obviously, location-wise, he's based in the northeast, but... It's interesting that he left that job at Hull to go to the Championship.
Yeah.
I know that Middlesbrough are definitely on the up, but that was an interesting one. And then also, you know, as an outsider looking in, when Phelan arrived, I kind of thought, well, there's a ready-made replacement if Bruce does get canned. Do you know what I mean?
Possibly. The Agnew one, at that point we were struggling, and it was like, is he going to desert in a sinking ship, really? It just came out of the blue, and it was. I don't know the reasons why. I don't think anyone really knows the reasons why, apart from what he's telling us in the press. But I don't know. It's a strange one. I mean, Phelan, I wouldn't like him as our manager, really. But I mean, I think Bruce is going to be quite safe because he's got a great relationship with our lovely Mr. Chairman.
Popular,
so, yeah. Not popular. Like the fans then.
Interesting.
That's it.
Yeah, don't get me started on the name change.
I guess he's got to toe that line, hasn't he? Because if he wants the money to buy those players to play out of position, then he's got to make sure that he's sort of has that good relationship with them, hasn't he?
Yeah, and I think that saved him. I mean, after West Brom, I think just after Christmas in January, we got beat and we were bad that day, and I thought, what's the point in getting rid of him? Because unfortunately, Pulis had already gone to West Brom. And he's the only man that I thought, if we were going to get rid of him at that point, we had to get Pulis in, because if we get rid of him now, who's going to come in and be able to do anything different?
Well, if you did get rid of him, at least you've dodged the Sherwood bullet, so, you know.
yeah, he's a strange one. I'm popular. Yeah. He's a media darling, isn't he? He's done nothing.
Well, Bruce is a bit of a media darling, though, because you were talking about his relationship with the chairman then, and obviously I thought he played that situation very well with the media, where he didn't sort of alienate the fans and he didn't criticise the chairman. He managed to come out of that quite well. We know about how he plays the media regarding his dismissal up here. We'll not get into that. So you always feel that You always feel he's going to do all right, don't you, because of that?
Yeah. I mean, he actually managed it very well, because there is a really strong feeling with a lot of hardcore Hull City fans about that issue, and if he'd have come out and supported it properly, his popularity would have waned quite a lot, really, especially with kind of the away fans and that kind of group. So he had to do it, because he couldn't really go and say, oh, I don't agree with the name change, because his chairman, I mean, Hassan Malam, he will sack him for doing something like that. He's that power hungry. He thinks he's God, so he had to handle it with kid gloves, really, which is what he did. So he kind of really said again yesterday, he did a press conference, and there's been a few rumours about the name change, because they said they'd tell us the decision by the end of this month, and then Hassan Malam asked them not to announce it. Now, at first, everyone thought that was because he'd lost, which I was never convinced by, and there's rumours now that name change might be accepted, which would be an absolute disgrace. And Brucey says something like, oh, we've asked for it not to be mentioned because it, you know, disrupt the club, this, you know, an important relegation battle, and let them have kind of... And he went to say kind of fan protests in the pre-season, then stopped himself. And a lot of people yesterday picked up on that and are panicking now. So it's going to be a difficult one. I mean, I don't know if anything's going to come out in the next couple of days, but if it comes out, the name change is going to be accepted. Expect fireworks on Tuesday, because I think there'll be protests a lot.
I have to ask, I know it's going back, and there's a Sunderland fan who can only dream of getting into Europe in some capacity just to experience. I know people deride the Europa League and all that, but as a fan, you know, as a Sunderland fan, the cups and that sort of thing are the only real moments of, you know, excitement you can ever really get, apart from like the drudgery of trying to survive in the Premier League. Hull got into Europe last season, we were very close, and then... I mean, how did that go down? Because he didn't really play a very strong team in that game, no. Did he? And how was it? Did people feel as though that was a missed opportunity? I know people say that the Europa League teams struggle in the league, but you're struggling in the league anyway. So would you rather have had a go at the Europa League and struggled in the league, or in hindsight, if it meant that you weren't in the Europa League, you could sort of finish mid-table? What would you have rather done?
I mean, we're probably never going to get there ever again, realistically. you know, and it kind of set the tone for the whole season. It was just a bit unorganised. I mean, we went to these, we nearly got knocked out in the first qualifying round. We knew we scored with 5 minutes to go, and we should have been beating the teams that we played. And he just played a weakened team, thinking we could get through. And he made a comment about how we have to play a weekend team because we've got Stoke on the Saturday, and we got a point from that. And he said, well, wouldn't have got a point from Stoke if we hadn't played the weekend team. Well, thanks very much for that. I really appreciate that point. I mean, realistically, I didn't go to any of the away European games, but we were all thinking, right, get into Europa League proper, then we'll plan where we're going to go. And it was all a big chance. I mean, when we got in it, I mean, it was just mind-blowing for me. I mean, I've been watching them since they were bottom of Division 4. And suddenly to be in Europe was just a different world. So I'd have liked him to have had a go, and he balls it up, really.
So it's like sort of the empathy that I've got for that situation. It's sort like, you know, we got to the semi-final of the Capital One Cup finals today, but you know, we got there and it gave you like lifelong memories. And just to think, you know, there's no reason why Hull might have got a decent tie away somewhere and got a result. It wouldn't have been unfeasible, and you would have, you know, you might have got knocked out in the quarterfinals of Europa League or something. I don't think that's unfeasible to say Hull could have got there, because the competition tends to doesn't get as strong until that point. But you know, you might have gone away and had a fantastic memory to come away with. You know, remember when we saw Hull, and now if we talk about it all the time, this Premier League sort of idea, and this modern... I mean, everyone wants to be in the Premier League. It is good in some respects, but at what point are you just
treading water?
You know, Sunderland have been treading water for eight seasons in the Premier League, and it just gets tiresome.
You get a lot of existential angst from it, I think, because you just like... okay, even if we started finishing 10th comfortably every season, a bit like Newcastle, well, ironically, we'll not go into that, yeah. But it, like Newcastle has sort of come and Stoke are kind of that middle of the road, sort of, or even Swansea.
Mm. Well, Stoke had the quarterfinals against Valencia and he played a week inside.
Well, was that Swansea, was it? Stoke. Oh, sorry, Stoke.
Yeah, Stoke went to Valencia and played it.
That's right. Plus Swansea beat Valencia in the Mestalla, and that, like you talk about memories, you know, those, whether they get relegated to the bottom tier, that's the kind of thing you take. You tell your kids
like you
about
say,
that.
I mean, what is, like, both Hull and Swansea, you look at fixtures. I mean, I did a bit for a website about 18 months ago, and I remember looking at Hull and Swansea, because I was comparing, when Swansea got the cup final, and I was saying, Swansea, on this day, I think, in the same day I wrote it, they were something like, I think they lost a game, and they were bottom of the fourth division, like you said, like when Sunderland were beating Bradford, because they played Bradford in the cup final. Sunderland were beating Bradford that day in the Championship to in their promotion fight or something like that, or maybe it was in the Premier League, I can't remember. But the fact that in that time Swansea have eclipsed Sunderland and Hull are on a level with Sunderland now, it's just incredible, and it just...
The rise has been unbelievable.
Yeah, and that's it's a great story, and you just think... You know, what an opportunity that was to get into Europe and just chuck it away like that. Yeah. Just...
I mean, we talk about, you know, can you imagine if Inter Milan had come here?
Yeah.
You know, in the city, causing havoc and that. I mean, you know?
I mean, what you mean.
City culture,
but can you imagine just like thousands of Italians just descending on a hole?
That would be fantastic.
I mean, fantastic, you know, we could have gone, you know, to some of these bigger grounds in Europe, and it's just... out of this world for us to have got there, and just kind of, you know, how much Bruce went on about how it was brilliant that we'd got there, and then later we can see him, and all of a sudden we're out. We're already on a downer, and we don't really pick up in the league, and it's not done us any good at all. Really. So it's a real shame.
Sunderland, back to the game, a Hull like Sunderland, John, where they lose the games you expect them to win, like almost there. You said you're questioning Bruce a little bit. You've won a couple of games. Now you would expect to go into this game and win it, and you know Sunderland normally lose these games, to be fair, just when you think they're starting to put a run together, a Hull like that.
I mean, this season we started off and we actually played really well for the first quarter of the season, but kept drawing games where we should have won. We've let in a lot of late goals this year, and then we've got key injuries to like the Jelavich again and the Army, and we dropped off a lot, and we just, like you say, last two home games, we won them both, and people have started saying, yeah, it's great, but I mean, we've got a hard run in, and we went to Stoke, and I thought, I didn't expect us to win at Stoke anyway, and I saw the team and thought, well, that's destined to be 1-0 defeat. I mean, you just knew Peter Crouch was going to come on and score. So, I mean, it's made it a really important game again, and every time we take one step back and one step forward...
We know that feeling. We know that feeling very well.
Everything you've just said, all the draws, the sort of...
Well,
like,
remember,
it feels like Sunderland season.
Before you beat us 3-1 on Boxing Day, the game before we went to Newcastle and won, so we were all thinking, right, Hull at home on Boxing Day, that come on, you got to win that one. The team came out, you saw midfield of Myler and Stephen Quinn, and you were thinking, right, rubbing your hands, 1-0 up after a minute, goal going as expected, and then Sunderland, typical Sunderland, turn up and do what they do best, and
with the help of the referee, I might.
Yeah,
I think it was a penalty.
But no, in fairness,
both of them.
Yeah, but in fairness, even aside from the refereeing, Hull were the dominant team on the day.
Second half, we just didn't turn up.
Completely imploded, and my fear is going into this game because we've got this weird psychological sort of nag going on. I can't think of a better word for it. Like, it's always at the back of your mind that you're going to Hull us again, whatever that is. Whatever it is you're doing,
you got bruised.
It worked. Yeah, we've been bruised.
you played a weekend team in that FA Cup quarter final last year. I couldn't believe the team you were putting out. I mean, you basically just went. It was 50-50 that game, and then they looked at the team and thought, "We've got a chance here."
I don't know
what happened there. Poyet's not doing really good, is he?
you just mentioned there, Craig, the fear, the psychological fear about going to the game. It's almost like the bogey side thing, isn't it? But do you think, because we're going to hear from Gus just now on this, do you not think it helps that the game it's came around so quickly after the Man United game that you haven't got time to dwell on it?
Maybe, but I just...
I ask Gus that question. It's a bit of a cliche, Gus, but
Do you prefer the fact that the whole game's coming up rather than a week of training? Because
yes.
You always say that you would rather play against straight away, wouldn't you?
Yes, because it's time. You know, I'm very honest. And now there is nothing that we can try to analyse or try to improve. It's about winning the next two games somehow. Let's stop talking about passing or identity or shapes, and let's make sure we win so there is no more excuses.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at, Craig. That's what I was driving at there. You almost feel like there isn't time to dwell on it. There isn't time to think about it now. It's like this is a game we feel like we certainly can't lose, but we would like to win, and it's come around quickly, though.
There is definitely something in that, because at times you do think Gus has overthought stuff this season. There's been moments where he's sort of fiddled on with the side, and like, you know, I'm all for like well thought out tactics and stuff, but you can maybe overthink it for players who aren't capable of thinking on that level or whatever. So maybe there's an instinctive response where you just go out and play the game, and it might help them. But on the flip side, it's Hull, and we do just have this continual habit of...
I can't get... Law of averages...
Then you would say that about the derby as well, wouldn't you? We don't want to think that, do you?
We turned around against Everton, got a couple of wins back-to-back after them. After
that
them.
Went on for years, never mind four games.
Yeah.
10 years of hell. Seven goals were conceded that time.
Oh, I know. All right, John, give us a prediction for the game.
If Jelinek plays, I think we'll win 2-0, 2-1. If Jelinek doesn't play, could be a draw. I think we've got a result in us, because I think we're at home and we're quite confident there. So yeah, I think a win if Jelinek plays.
Craig,
probably 1-1 draw. Sort of that's maybe an optimistic, I'm afraid, just because of the fixture. Doesn't inspire me with any confidence.
I'm going to say Sunderland win purely because I can't bear the thought of dwelling over another defeat to Hull and
Steve Bruce
and
in particular.
Steve Bruce in particular for 10 days until he inevitably
Sherwood
the opportunity.
And then
to break
say something
duck.
Like, you know, well, some people might think I didn't do a bad job there after all, or something like that.
Yeah.
It's going to come out and say
he will.
He's got a real issue, hasn't he?
He's got
problems. He needs to see somebody.
I was going
to
say he's got a bee in his bonnet, but he looks like he's been stung by it several times.
Yeah, he does.
That's getting a bit personal now.
We're just getting a bit personal abuse towards Bruce now. It's never a good thing, really.
We actually did have some good time for him. He does.
Yeah. First half was great on him, to be fair.
It was.
I can't be more optimistic than a draw either. Right, when we come back, we're going to do Question of the Week, because we have tickets for Aston Villa to give away. Hooray! Question of the Week is back, and we have Aston Villa tickets to give away, and we do need you all there, because that could be a huge game, really.
Stephen there creating feedback by not having his earphones on.
I know. I was just...
Yeah, you as well, Craig.
I wasn't creating any feedback.
Sitting there like butter wouldn't melt.
I was just looking at the Man City score.
What is the Man City
score? It's
0-0.
It's nothing to get excited about.
No, that's rubbish. Sounds like it's just bog standard.
Seven minutes in. Give it time. Okay. Give it time.
Sounds like a negative game to me. 7 minutes in with the players available, they should be scoring loads of goals.
I think Jekyll's done a header or something.
How
so,
many
you know, stuff's happening.
How many kids are in?
Well, no kids.
Dave just telling you this, because listeners will know the result of this game.
We've lost the plot again.
Yeah, we're going to finish on Question of the Week then. We need everybody at that Villa game, to be fair, don't we? Because it could be huge.
Again, tickets courtesy of lovely people at Sunderland Football Club. Very nice of them to give us the opportunity to give two tickets away with a silly prize. And the question this week was Sherwood-based. his ratio took a hit, didn't it? One game. Have you noticed when he talks about...
his win ratio,
He doesn't say we. He goes, well, I've played one game and I've scored one goal. Good ratio. Well, it's now halved because he didn't score in their following game.
He's great, isn't he? He's
amazing.
I love that they've literally just employees.
We'll not be laughing when he's.
Oh, they'll be beating us.
Punch in the air.
He'll be flinging his gilly out. Oh, right, won't
exactly.
He?
Aye.
They'll come in and do us 3-0 or something.
Yeah, but and if that is ratio, he was like great ratio. Anyway, so the question was based around the gilets mentioned by the lovely Craig Clark. So yeah, Tim Sherwood tries to channel the power of the G-League in order to get positive results. If you could add an item of clothing to a player or Sunderland manager, Gus Poyet, what would it be to try and help us out? And we had some excellent answers. It's the best question of the week we might have ever had, answers-wise. So I've got quite a few. I'd like to say that the snood answers, which are about 15 of them, have all been turfed. So because he wore it yesterday.
He wore it yesterday, yeah.
No, so, I did.
So that's gone.
He was snooted up, like.
So here we go, then.
Good effort, so nonetheless. Yeah. Craig, listen out, because you'll have to help us judge the winner.
So we've got Algie Henderson, says spats and a violin case. Michael Stelling.
What's that? I don't know. Spats and the violin clip.
I think it's like some sort of gangster, maybe, like Desperado.
The irony is, put spats and the violin case
clearly.
I don't understand what that means. Yeah. So
we'll continue. I'm afraid that one might not be my winner. Yeah.
Michael Stelling says, Harry Potter's invisibility cloak, give it to whoever so we can score some mysterious goals. Mark Whitelaw, a balaclava to see if we can steal a point or three. Life of Grime says he needs a trilby like the legend that is Bob Stoke, or hats are very in these days. Kevin Bell says if Fletcher could don a device allowing me to give him an electric shock whenever he does a superfluous back heel, I could get on board with that. Keith Robertson says I want to see Gus wear a huge form hand so when Gomez gives a ball away he can slap his breast off. Gary Jerry says a Fergie time watch, good for those close 0-0 stalemates. Bread just says Mankini. Daz says all any player needs is Lee Cannon style shorts, problem sorted, pull them read up. Michael Paul says, how about this dress everybody's talking about that I've got no opinion on? Takes the heat off this weekend's inevitable result in another dress based what Adam Ross has said, that effing dress everyone is harping on about, so everyone could see it's blue and black and people will shut up about it. Rory Fallow says Nyren's trilby from when we won the league at Luton in 2007. John Ridley says make Poyet wear a baseball cap to mug off Tony Pulis. The team will think Pulis is boss and they'll put a shift in. David Burke says Defoe gets Madonna's cape for an eye-catching fall in the box that not even Kevin Friend could turn down for a penalty.
I was hoping a Madonna cape would come up.
Yeah. Ali Buchanan says I reckon a two-way could be the key to restoring Fletcher's confidence.
What a two-way? He's got hair regrowth, though.
That's not working.
We talk about this all the time. We can't go there again.
Steve Waggett says the strip they wore against the Mags, make them take it home and wash it themselves when they wear it, the world beaters. Fish Face Fid says Nat Quinn's disco pants might help him realise the times were actually quite good. Mark says a cattle prod for Gomez. Dixon says get Gomez to wear his short cat style, might get him working a bit harder. GSDFTM04 says has to be Josie Altidore mask, surely channeling the energy of Big Josma. David Parker says a laser pen for Larson so he doesn't point and shout so much. David Parker again said in a suit of armour for Wickham so he might dare challenge for a header, and a pacemaker for Gomez. Daniel Shellard says Winkle pickers to get right up there when kicking Wickham up the arse. And Jack McBride says a Technicolour overcoat. So what
for
a great...
no reason, just a Technicolour. Yeah, no one's going to wear it either, we're just going to have one.
So well, what do you think about that? It's a very good answer.
I like the caramel shorts one always, just because that's a good thing.
My personal favourite was simply Mankini.
Mankini is quite good. I quite like the
Madonna.
For me, it's a choice between David Burke's Madonna and Ali Buchanan's toupee.
I like the Madonna one because it was creative.
I think the most creative is the one that leaves it open to your imagination. Mankini. Could mean anything. I don't know if I want to imagine it, but I'm going with Mankini.
Well, I'm going for the Madonna one.
Madonna's the real winner. But so, Mankini's a special mention.
So, we'll do a top three just in case. Because to win this, you've got to get in touch with us. So, first place, Madonna, David Burke with the Madonna cape. Second place,
Mankini's really a bit of a joke. I just think it's hilarious because it's just written one word. It's not really a
what are the caramel ones?
There was
a couple of caramel shorts. The dress ones were good as well, but there was two of them.
The first dress one was my personal favourite, I think.
The wording of it was better.
I like that one. So, I go for that. Was my personal favourite on that topic.
I thought the foam hands one was quite good.
I feel sorry for Gomez.
Let's not bully people. we'll go for top two. Well, top three. We'll say David Burke first, Mankini second.
Can't be second.
No, let Craig's favourite go second.
All right,
and then we'll put Mankini third. It shouldn't get that far down, hopefully, anyway.
So who is the first? Who was the first? The Wingle pickers one was quite funny.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Well, because
we shouldn't really like be digging out the players all the time.
No, but it's funny because it's a Wingle picker of someone's jacket.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Michael Paul's dress. So Michael Paul's dress, second, David Burke first, and Mancini third.
Mancini's your wild card, isn't it?
Yeah.
So basically, if you want to win any of these, just put one random word in, you've got a good shout.
So, yeah, so David Burke, you've won two tickets to the Aston Villa game. Get in touch with us.
Or don't, if you'd prefer not to.
You've got plenty of time to get in touch as well, because there's no show next week because it's international break.
Which we only discovered yesterday.
So
I thought it was like a cup final or something, or a cup weekend. I couldn't understand what was going on.
International break, so...
Until yesterday, we thought we were playing Virgil Saturday, both of us.
I thought we were just having a week off for the FA Cup.
So, yes, so we'll be back within the light. Well, Alan won't be in the light on Thursday.
No, you won't.
But I'll be back the following week. And then, yes, we'll be back with Wiseman, say, a week today, tomorrow, whenever it is.
OK. Well, I think we've went over the limit we were supposed to be in the studio for so we best do one,
Scott,
OK. Thanks for listening. Over and out.
Trot.